Krishna Jivananda.
Hare Sahana Vavadu Sahana Bhunakta Sahane Yangara Vahai Tejasvi Nagari Namastama Vishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Section 35. Saunaka said, O son of Suta, thou hast told us the reason why the snakes were cursed by their mother, and why Vinata was cursed by her son. Thou hast also told us about the bestowal of boons by their husband on Kadru and Vinata. Thou hast likewise told us the name of Vinata's sons, but thou hast not yet recited to us the names of the snakes. We are anxious to hear the names of the principal ones. Sauti said, O thou whose wealth is asceticism, from fear of being lengthy, I shall not mention the names of all the snakes, but I will recite the names of the chief ones. Listen to me. So it means he knows them all, but he's only going to say the main ones. Sesha was born first, and then Vasuki. Then were born Airavata, Takshaka, Karkotaka, Dhananjaya, Kalakeya, the serpent Mani, Purana, Pinjaraka, and Elapatra, Vamana, Nila, Anila, Kalmasha, Savala, Aryaka, Ugra, Kalasa, Potaka, Suramuka, Dadhimuka, Vimalapindaka, Apta, Karotaka, Samka, Valishika, Nishtanaka, Hemaguna, Nahusha, Pingala, Vahyakarna, Hastipada, Mughara Pindaka, Kambala, Ashvatara, Kaliyakta, Vrita, Samvartaka, Padma, Mahapadma, Shankamuka, Kushamandaka, Kshemaka, Pindaraka, Karavirya, Pushpadanstraka, Vilvaka, Vilvapandra, Mushikada, Shankashirash, Purnabhadra, Haridraka, Aparnajita, Jyotika, Srivaha, Kauravya, Dhritarashtra, Shankapinda, Viratas, Suvahu, Salipinda, Prabhakara, Hastipinda, Pitaraka, Samuksha, Kauna Pashana, Kutara, Kunjara, Kumuda, Kumudraksha, Titri, Halika, Karadama, Vahumulaka, Karaka, Arkakara, Kundodara, and Mahodara. Thus, O best of regenerate ones, I have said the names of the principal serpents. From fear of being tedious, I do not give names of the rest. O thou whose wealth is asceticism, the sons of these snakes with their grandsons are innumerable. Reflecting upon this, I shall not name them to thee. O best of ascetics, in this world the number of snakes baffles calculation, there being many thousands and millions of them. So ends the 35th section of the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. So we say Sesha was first. That means Lord Anantasesh. Section 36. Shaunaka said, O child, thou hast named many of the serpents gifted with great energy and incapable of being easily overcome. What did they do after hearing of that curse? The curse meaning that they were to die in the snake sacrifice. Sauti said, the illustrious Sesha, among them of great renown, leaving his mother, practiced hard penances, living upon air and rigidly observing his vows. He practiced these ascetic devotions, repairing to Gandhamandana, Vadri, Gokarna, and the woods of Pushkara, and the foot of Himavat. And he passed his days in those sacred regions, some of which were sacred for the water and others for the soil, in regard to the rigid observance of his vows, with singleness of aim and his passions under complete control. And the grandsire of all, Brahma, saw that ascetic with knotted hair, clad in rags, and his flesh, skin, and sinews dried up owing to the hard penances he was practicing. And the grandsire, addressing him, that penance practicing one of great fortitude, said, what is that thou dost, O Sesha? Let the welfare of the creatures of the world also engage thy thoughts. O sinless one, thou art afflicting all creatures by their hard penances, by thy hard penances. O Sesha, tell me the desire implanted in thy breast. And it means he's been doing his penances, so that generally means you have a determination of what you want. So then, having done this, now it's become very, very strong, so that it's starting to affect other living entities, his austerities. So now Brahma's saying, now that you've done your austerities, you perfected them, now you should turn your attention to others, the benefit of others in the universe, rather than just yourself, because now the others in the universe are starting to become disturbed. And Sesha replied, My uterine brothers, that means those of the same mother, are all of wicked hearts. I do not desire to live amongst them. Let this be sanctioned by thee. Because otherwise he has obligation. He's the oldest son. You know, they're relatives. They can say, why you're living outside? You don't care for us, blah, blah, blah. But his point is, there's such bad association. Please bless me that I have no obligation to live with them. Like enemies, they are always jealous of one another. I am, therefore, engaged in ascetic devotions. I will not see them even. They never show any kindness for Vinata and her son. Indeed, Vinata's son, capable of ranging through the skies, is another brother of ours. They always envy him. And he too, is much stronger owing to the bestowal of that boon by our father, the high-souled Kasyapa. So he's saying is that they're always envious and jealous of Garuda, and at the same time he's more powerful than them, you know. So it's like they shouldn't be bothering him like that. And that blessing has come from their father, right? So if the father is giving a blessing, why should anybody else? Why the other brothers then feel bad? They should feel happy, like we see in Dwarka, that Krishna, from each of his 16,108 wives, had 10 sons. So whenever one of the sons was sitting on Krishna's lap, the other 9 sons would think, oh, because of his great piety, then therefore he is able to sit there. So they were appreciative of his good fortune. They weren't thinking, why he's sitting there, why not me? Yeah? So that's what Sesha is complaining about, is here the father is giving blessing to Garuda. So then, why are the other brothers jealous? Right? That means they don't really respect the father. Right? Otherwise, why be jealous of the brothers? Yeah. For these, I engage in ascetic penances, and I will cast off this body of mine so that I may avoid companionship with them even in another state of life. Right, so he's just worried he doesn't want to be associated with them, so he's just going to do austerities until he leaves his body. Right? Because even he leaves and goes in sannyas, he's still connected technically. Like that. Unto Sesh, who had said so, the grandsire said, O Sesha, I know the behavior of all thy brothers, and their great danger owing to their offense against their mother. But, O snake, a remedy for this hath been provided by me even beforehand. It behooveth thee not to grieve for thy brothers. O Sesha, ask of me the boon thou desirest. I have been highly gratified with thee, and I will grant thee today a boon. O best of snakes, it is fortunate that thy heart hath been set on virtue. Let thy heart be more and more firmly set on virtue. Then Sesha replied, O divine grandsire, this is the boon desired by me. Namely, may my heart always delight in virtue and in blessed ascetic penances, O Lord of all. Right? Because if your heart doesn't want to do, you won't do, right? You're going to do whatever it is you like doing. Right? For some time you can do something austere or like that, but basically you're not going to do anything until... you like doing it. You can't continue it. So he's saying, may I always like to perform austerities and virtuous activities. That means then I will always do them. Rather than saying, may I always be engaged in these things. You may be engaged but not liking them. Right? So the benefit from it will be less. But if it's that, may I be always happy performing virtuous activities and penances, then naturally you will do them. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right. So in other words, the attitude in which something is done is more important than the activity itself, right? Because otherwise, if the activity is being performed, but the attitude's not right, the benefit gained from it may not be so great, right? But if we are absorbed, focused on what we do, then the benefit we get is greater. Right, so that's why we see Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, may I gain a taste for chanting your holy name. Right? Like that. Does that make sense? Or may I always be absorbed in your chanting your holy name. They don't say, let me always chant your holy name. Right? It's always, let me have a taste for the name, be absorbed in the name, have the association of the devotees, appreciate the devotees. Does that make sense? So the activities of the devotional service, the mentality that goes behind it, that's actually what powers it, right? because you are attracted to an activity, because you want to gain the results of that activity, therefore we perform the activity. So the activity, it's performing the activity, is actually based on the desire and need to perform it. Does that make sense? Yep. Okay. Brahman said, O Sesha, I am exceedingly gratified with this thy self-denial and love of peace. But at my command, let this act be done by thee for the good of my creatures. Bear thou, O Sesha, properly and well this earth so unsteady, with her mountains and forests, her seas and towns and retreats, so that she may be steady. Sesha said, O divine Lord of all creatures, O bestower of boons, O Lord of the earth, Lord of every created thing, Lord of the universe, I will, even as thou sayest, hold the earth steady. Therefore, O Lord of all creatures, place her on my head. Right? So it's already being held up by, you know, the tortoise and the elephants. But I think the elephants now and again, when they move, then there's earthquakes. So therefore he wants Sesha there to steady it. Brahman said, O best of snakes, go underneath the earth, and she will herself give thee a crevice to pass through. And, O Sesha, by holding the earth, thou shalt certainly do what is prized by me very greatly. Sauti continued, then the elder brother of the king of the snakes, right? So now it seems he technically, being the elder brother, is the king of the snakes, right? But it says he is the elder brother of the king of the snakes, right? So that means Brahma's vow that he not be connected with them. Right, then is then accomplished. Then the elder brother of the king of snakes entered a hole, passed to the other side of the earth, and holding her, supported with his head that goddess with her belt of seas passing all around. Brahman said, O Sesha, O best of snakes, thou art the god Dharma, because alone with thy huge body thou supportest the earth, with everything on her, even as I myself, or Valavit, Indra, can. Sauti continued, the snake Sesha, the lord Ananta, of great prowess, lives underneath the earth, alone supporting the world at the command of Brahman, and the illustrious grandsire, the best of the immortals, then gave unto Ananta the bird of fair feathers, namely the son of Vinata, for Ananta's help. The bird of fair feathers. So ends the 36th section of the Astika Parva, of the Adi Parva. Section 37. Sauti said, that best of snakes, namely Vasuki, hearing the curse of his mother, reflected how to render it abortive. Right? So now he said, remember the question was, what did the snakes do when they heard that they were cursed? So now we heard what Ananta did. Right? He just disassociated himself from everybody, because they were, you know, just their qualities were such. Now we're hearing what Vasuki did. He held a consultation with all his brothers, Airavata and others, intent upon doing what they deemed best for themselves. Remember, Airavata is the third brother, right? Then Takshika is the fourth. And Vasuki said, O ye sinless ones, the object of this curse is known to be you, is known to you. It behooveth us to strive to neutralize it. Remedies certainly exist for all curses, but no remedy can avail those cursed by their mother. Hearing that this curse has been uttered in the presence of the immutable, the infinite and the true one, my heart trembleth. Right? Surely our annihilation hath come, because Brahma sanctioned it, as you remember before. So therefore, the mother is cursed and Brahma is sanctioned, so it's going to be a tough one to get around. My heart trembleth. Surely our annihilation hath come. Otherwise, why should not the immutable Lord prevent our mother while uttering the curse? Therefore, let us consult today how we may secure the safety of the snakes. Let us not waste time. All of you are wise and discerning. We will consult together and find out the means of deliverance, as did the gods of yore to regain lost Agni, who had concealed himself within a cave, so that Janamejaya's sacrifice for the destruction of the snakes may not take place, and so that we may not meet with destruction. Sauti continued, thus addressed all the offspring of Kadru, assembled together and wise in councils, submitted their opinions to one another. One party of the serpents said, we should assume the guise of a superior Brahmins and beseech Janamejaya, saying, this intended sacrifice of yours ought not to take place. Other snakes, thinking themselves wise, said, we should all become his favorite counselors. He will then certainly ask for our advice in all projects, and we will then give him such advice that the sacrifice may be obstructed. The king, the foremost of wise men, thinking us of sterling worth, will certainly ask us about this sacrifice. We will say it must not be done. And pointing to many serious evils in this and the next worlds, we will take care that the practice may not take place. Or let one of the snakes approaching bite the person who, intending the monarch's good and well acquainted with the rites of the snake sacrifice, may be appointed as the sacrificial priest, so that he will die. The sacrificial priest dying, the sacrifice will not be completed. We will also bite all those who, acquainted with the rites of the snake sacrifice, may be appointed ritviks of the sacrifice, and by that means attain our object. Other snakes, more virtuous and kind, said, oh, this counsel of yours is evil. It is not meant to kill brahmanas. In danger, that remedy is proper, which is blessed on the practices of the righteous. Unrighteousness finally destroyeth the world. Other serpents said, we will extinguish the blazing sacrificial fire by ourselves becoming clouds, luminous with lightning and pouring down showers. Other snakes, the best of their kind, proposed, going by night, let us steal away the vessel of soma juice. That will disturb the rite. Or, at that sacrifice, let the snakes, by hundreds and thousands, bite the people and spread terror around. Or, let the serpents defile the pure food with their food-defiling urine and dung. Others said, let us become the king's ritviks and obstruct his sacrifice by saying at the outset, give us the sacrificial fee. He, the king, being placed in our power, will do whatever we like. Others there said, when the king will sport in the waters, we will carry him to our home and bind him so that the sacrifice will not take place. Other serpents who deemed themselves wise said, approaching the king, let us bite him so that our object will be accomplished. By his death, the root of all evil will be torn up. This is the final deliberation of us all. O thou who hearest with thy eyes. Right? Because they generally don't, snakes don't have ears. Then do speedily what thou deemest proper. Having said this, they looked intently at Vasuki, that best of snakes. And Vasuki also, after reflecting, answered, saying, ye snakes, this final determination of your This final determination of you doth not seem worthy of adoption. The vice of you all is not to my liking. What shall I say which would be for your good? I think the grace of the illustrious Kasyapa, our father, can alone do us good. Ye snakes, my heart doth not know which of all your suggestions is to be adopted for the welfare of my race, as also of me. That must be done by me, which would be to your weal. It is this that makes me anxious. For the credit, for the discredit of the measure is mine alone. So ends the 37th section of the Astika Parva, of the Adi Parva. But he's saying the credit and the discredit of measure is mine alone. he being the eldest son or the one responsible for all the others, then what he does, they give advice, but he's the one that accomplishes it, right? So therefore, who does the action, they're the one who gets the credit or the discredit. Does that make sense? Others may give advice, that is there, but ultimately the person has made his choice. You know, does that make sense? So that's important for those who find themselves in a position of giving advice, that ultimately then that position must be respected, that since they are doing it, then if there is credit, that credit goes to the person who did it. You can't say, well, that was my advice, it wasn't them. No, because if they do wrong, then the credit, discredit also goes to them. Because otherwise, if you're going to say, no, it's my credit because I told him, that means if it goes wrong, then it's your fault. Does that make sense? The two go together. Very important. Credit and discredit go together. Just like authority and responsibility go together. Right? You can't take the credit and not the discredit. You can't take the authority without taking the responsibility. Right? So when the responsibility is there, because of the authority, then you get the credit or the discredit. Right? Does that make sense? But if we want to take the credit, you know, or the authority, but avoid the discredit or the responsibility, that's not proper. Right? So that we can see here is Vasuki is making this point here. So I don't really like the what's there. Therefore, I do it. So that means when people are giving advice, they can't pressurize that you must follow my advice. No. You can give advice and that's where it stops. That's advice. If you're pressuring, that's political. That's not advice. Right? If you pressure, it's not advice. You simply give it and then it's... Because his point is since I'm going to take the credit or loss, therefore, it's my decision. I don't, at this point, appreciate your advice, so I'm waiting and contemplating and seeing. Does that make sense? Right? Yes? So ends the 37th section in the Astika Parva, the Adi Parva. Section 38. Saudi said, hearing the respective speeches of all the snakes, and hearing also the words of Vasuki, Ilapatra began to address them, saying, that sacrifice is not one that can be prevented, nor is King Janamijaya of the Pandava race from whom this fear proceedeth, such that he can be hindered. O the person, O king, who is afflicted by fate, hath recourse to fate alone. Nothing else can be his refuge. Ye base of snakes, this fear of yours hath fate for its root. Fate alone must be our refuge in this. Right? In other words, he's saying that you can make all these arrangements, but it's by fate, right? Predestiny due to your previous actions that you're going to get a result. So trying anything else but turning to the fate itself is not going to give you a solution. Does that make sense? So in other words, the results... Dealing directly with the results of your activities, that's going to give you the solution to the problem of the results of your activities. Does that make sense? So it's how you deal with the results of your activities that actually then makes things work. Does that make sense? Right? It's not finding something else, because that is an activity that will give a result itself. So how long does one go on like this? Right? So the activity has been performed, a result has come, you deal properly with that result, then that whole line of action-reaction is finished. Does that make sense? Or at least it brings a positive. The negative has been removed. Right? Fate alone must be our refuge in this. Listen to what I say. When that curse was uttered, ye best of snakes, in fear I lay crouching on the lap of our mother. Ye best of snakes, and O Lord Vasuki, of great splendor. From that place I heard the words the sorrowing god spake unto the grandsire. The god said, O grandsire, thou god of gods, who else than the cruel Kadru could do this? After getting such dear children, curse them so, even in thy presence. And, O grandsire, by thee thou hast been spoken with reference to these words of her, be it so. Right? So in the presence of Brahma, she spoke this, and then Brahma said, okay. We wish to know the reason why thou didst not prevent her, Brahman replied. The snakes have multiplied. They are cruel and terrible in form and highly poisonous. From desire of the good of my creatures, I did not prevent Kadru then. Those poisonous serpents and others who are sinful, biting others for no fault, shall indeed be destroyed, but not they who are harmless and virtuous. Right? So in other words, those snakes that just are proud of their, their poison and their prowess, bite others for no reason, they'll be the ones that will be killed. But those who are virtuous and behave properly, they will not. Right? Because it's not a problem of getting rid of snakes, the snakes that behave badly. And hear also how, when the hour comes, the snakes may escape this dreadful calamity. There shall be born in the race of the Yayavaras a great rishi known by the name of Jaratkaru, intelligent and with passions under complete control. That Jaratkaru will have a son of the name of Astika. He shall put a stop to that sacrifice, and those snakes who shall be virtuous shall escape therefrom. Right? He'll stop the sacrifice, but only at the point where the virtuous snakes haven't come into the fire yet. In other words, the ones that are more badly, you know, or improperly behaved, they'll already be killed in the sacrifice. The god said, O thou truth-knowing one, on whom shall Jaratkaru, that foremost Muni, gifted with great energy and asceticism, beget that illustrious son? Brahma answered, gifted with great energy, that best Brahmana will beget a son possessed of great energy, and a wife of the same name as his. Vasuki, the king of snakes, hath a sister of the name of Jaratkaru. The son of whom I speak shall be born of her, and he shall liberate the snakes. Ilapatra continued, the gods then said unto the grandsire, be it so. And the Lord Brahman, having said so unto the gods, went to heaven. O Vasuki, I see before me that sister of thine known by the name of Jaratkaru. For relieving us from fear, give her as alms unto him, the rishi, Jaratkaru, of excellent vows, who shall roam a begging for a bride. This means of relief has been heard of by me. Right, so, in the presence of Brahma, then Kadru cursed her sons, and Brahma thought that this was good. So he sanctioned it for killing those who were bad, but not for those who were good. And so then the son born of their sister and the sage then shall stop the sacrifice. So now he's saying, now you should find this Brahman and give our sister to him. And so then this release from the curse will be effected. Section 39. Sauti said, O best of regenerate ones, hearing these words of Elapatra, all the servants in great delight exclaimed, well said, well said. And from that time Vasuki set about carefully bringing up that maiden, namely his sister Jaratkaru, and he took great delight in rearing her. Right, so carefully bringing up and taking great delight, this is important. So careful, because if you're going to bring up somebody properly, then it has to be carefully done, right? All details has to be seen to. The proper situations, the proper training, the proper attitude, all this must be given. So that's why this care must be there. And at the same time, great delight means that you are happy doing this. Not that it's just you're doing it because you have to do it. No, this is something that you want to do. Does that make sense? So training is like that. I mean, if you're going to train somebody, you have to like training, and you have to be careful and attend to the details in the training. The more you attend to the details, the more effective will be the training. The less the details, the less effective. Does that make sense? And much time did not elapse from this when the gods and the asuras assembling together churned the abode of Varuna. And Vasuki, the foremost of all gifted with strength, became the churning cord. And directly the work was over. The king of snakes presented himself before the grandsire, and the gods, accompanied by Vasuki, addressed the grandsire, saying, O Lord, Vasuki is suffering great affliction from fear of his mother's curse. It behooveth thee to root out the sorrow begotten of the curse of his mother that hath pierced the heart of Vasuki, desirous of the weal of his race. The king of the snakes is ever our friend and benefactor, O Lord, the gods. Be gracious unto him and assuage his mind's fever. It means he's always helping the demigods, right? He came as the churning rod, and so that's not a, you know, a light task, right? It means when you pull on a rope, there's a lot of tension. So that means his body's the rope, and you've got, you know, millions of demigods pulling on one side and millions of asuras pulling on the other side. So, you know, it's going to take some personal strength and austerity to be comfortable with that. Does that make sense? Yes.
Also, we made a point that he didn't want to just survive because he just wanted to live, but because he wanted to follow, keep the parampara going, the family tradition.
His worry was for the snakes. In other words, his race, being the king, he was worried for the snakes, not so much for himself. Right? Does that make sense? Because protection means that. You take care of those who you protect. Not so much you're worried about yourself. Of course, you have to take care of yourself, otherwise how you protect. But your purpose of taking care of yourself to protect is so that the protection can go on. Does that make sense?
Brahman replied, O ye immortals, I have thought in my mind of what ye have said. Let the king of the snakes do that which hath been communicated to him before by Elapatra. The time hath arrived. Those only shall be destroyed that are wicked, not those who are virtuous. Jarakardo hath been born, and that Brahmana is engaged in hard ascetic penances. Let Vasuki at the proper time bestow on him his sister. Ye gods, what hath been spoken by the snake Elapatra? For the wheel of the snakes is true and not otherwise. Right? So what Elapatra said, what he related, then Brahma then also proves that. So this is also interesting, is that Brahman has said this, and then it's been it's been given by Elapatra to the brothers. Right? And so Brahman refers to that. Does that make sense? Rather than saying, yes, I said this. No, he says that Elapatra has related this to them, so his words are correct, they should follow that. Right? Rather than saying, you know, they should follow my order or that. Because Elapatra, what he said, is what Brahman said. Does that make sense? So, in other words, that whole relationship of how it's been given to somebody is, I've given it, but it's come to that person through a second, through some medium, right? So that medium is who they have the relationship with. So through that medium, then that's how they should understand it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Though the medium is referring to the source, right? It means Elapatra is referring to Brahma. But Brahma is referring to Elapatra because Elapatra is the one that they know. Does that make sense? Yeah? So in dealing, then this is, even though one is authority, but if under one has, if underneath you are also authorities who have people under their command, then you always support that authority. Right? You don't overcome that and just directly deal without consideration. Does that make sense? Right? It's important. Otherwise, then all your authorities will go away. You won't have any support or assistance. Right? Not of any stature, of course. You might have, you know, some who are younger, but once they mature, then you won't have. Sauti continued, then the king of the snakes, Vasuki, afflicted with the curse of his mother, hearing these words of the grandsire, and intending to bestow his sister on the rishi Jarakaru, commanded all the serpents, a large number of whom were ever attentive to their duties, to watch the rishi Jarakaru, saying, when the lord Jarakaru will ask for a wife, come immediately and inform me of it. The weal of our race depends upon it. Right, so they're not, he's not going otherwise, but when he's desirous, then he's going with his sister. Right, does that make sense? One is that he's a brahmachari, so if a brahmachari is not desirous, then he's not approached. But when he's desirous, then he's approached. Does that make sense? That's one of the rules, just like we see that, Damayanti, Sukracharya's daughter. So she, like Kaccha, who was studying in her father's ashram, but because he was a student, even though she liked him, she never approached him, right, for marriage. They always just interacted like brother and sister. Right? After he graduated, once he graduates, because someone who graduates means they're going to get married, right? Graduation is only for those who get married. Graduation is not for those who don't get married in the tradition, right? Because graduation means I'm moving from brahmachari ashram to grihastha ashram, right? A brahmachari is a student, so if you remain a brahmachari, it means you don't graduate. Does that make sense? Because you're a lifetime student. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we see here that etiquette is being followed, as one. And two is, you don't offer something that somebody doesn't want. Right? Because if he's not interested, then you may offer, he may refuse. So that may not be good. Does that make sense? Yeah? Shaunaka said, O son of Suta, I desire to know the reason why the illustrious Rishi, whom thou hast named Jarakaru, came to be so called on earth. It behooveth thee to tell us the etymology of the name Jarakaru. Right? So they're thorough in their questions. You know, everything that comes up, they want to know everything, the history, the background, and everything. It's very important. When you're making a decision on something, or trying to understand something, then the context of it is also important. You understand context? Context means the time, place, and circumstance in which the you know, the activity is to be or was performed. Does that make sense? So then you know why it was there. You know, just like you're saying, okay, they have class here, but then why do they have class here? That's because you know, up there, if we go upstairs to where the temple is supposed to be, it's not there. So, therefore, the class which is normally in the temple is here. Does that make sense? So then you know what's the history, what's the reason behind it. Does that make sense? So that's always important to be able to put into context the point. Means you have some situation, there's standard rulings on those situations, so that naturally will be a favored conclusion. But to confirm that, you have to know the time, place, and circumstance, because otherwise it may be otherwise. It may be different, right? Like before, then all these his brothers were giving these things, we can go and bite this person or this or that. And so you could look at it in one way that, yeah, snakes, you know, to protect themselves, they bite people, right? So he's saying is in danger, yes, then that's maybe done. You're attacked, then you fight back, you bite. But here we're not being attacked. It's simply fate is being carried out. And so the king here is just an instrument. Right? So then that doesn't apply here. This is not that kind of danger. Does that make sense? So even though one would look at it that, you know, someone's giving a problem, they are snakes, snakes bite, people that are bitten die, therefore a person giving problem that is bitten by the snake no longer gives problem to the snake. Right? A very natural, logical progression. But the situation is different. So therefore, Vasuki says, this rule that's fairly straightforward doesn't apply. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. So, like that, one has to be able to judge. Otherwise, one gets attached to the rules and regulations and follows them only because they're to be followed, rather than understanding why they're followed, what they're trying to establish. Does that make sense? Yeah. Hmm. Sati said, Jara is said to mean waste, and Karu implies huge. This rishi's body had been huge, and he gradually reduced it by severe ascetic penances. For the same reason, O Brahmanas, the sister of Vasuki, was called Jara Karu. Right? So his body was very big, and he wasted it away by austerity. Right. So Vasuki's sister was the same. Right. That was why he wanted a wife of the same name. Right. Somebody doesn't get the name Jarakaru unless they're doing something. Does that make sense? So therefore, if there's a girl who's named Jarakaru, right, they generally would find some sweeter name, but she's named Jarakaru because of her ascetic nature. So then the two sages would be similar, right? The husband and wife. So that's important. If they're not of the same nature, they will not. How will they live together? How will they get along? How will they have the same plans? How will the child be of the same nature, right? Otherwise the parents are a different nature, then that's okay for them because they're one nature and a second nature. But if the child has both natures, how will they figure out who they are? Right? What to do? Does that make sense? So that's why it's important they're the same nature. Then, you know, so that's his point. Yeah? Because the whole idea here is the son. So the son should be of good quality. That means the parent should be of equal nature, have the same mentality, same goals, determinations, everything. Then that means then the child will have that same kind of focus. Right? Because without focus, nothing gets done. And if you don't know whether I should go left or right, does anything happen? No, because there's no focus. But if you're saying, yes, I'm going left, or yes, I'm going right, then you know, then something gets done. Right? Does that make sense? So these things are very, very important. Right? People may say, oh, this is old-fashioned and this and that, but I would ask, where is it old-fashioned in doing something that scientifically works? Right, and giving that up for some unscientifically unapproved activity that has, even to today, no matter how long much is practiced, never proven very fruitful. Right? So if you have an activity that in the past, when it was understood and practiced, worked perfectly, and then you have an alternative to that to not follow that, and therefore, you know, basically generally get a bad result. How can one say that it's old-fashioned, or it doesn't apply, or we're modern, or we're intelligent, or like that? Just because you can think, but if your thinking means you come to the wrong conclusion, what is the benefit of being intelligent? Right? Better a fool who follows authority and gets a good result than an intelligent man who doesn't follow authority and gets a bad result. Isn't it? So one should be very convinced that authority, tradition, are important, and there is no other way to actually deal in the cosmic creation, because that's given by God. And doing activities not based on God's direction, of what use is that? Right? Only the uninformed, the uneducated, the foolish would take such a stand and practice it, or even worse, profess it. Right? Because if you do nonsense, you'll get the direct result of that nonsense. That's bad. But if you make it into a philosophy and profess it, you'll get 100 times the reaction for doing that nonsense. 100. So just because one uses educated words, just because one uses logic, does not mean that one will not get 100 times the reaction. Because it doesn't matter what we say. What matters, what is of substance, is what is said by God and the previous acharyas. That's what matters. Nothing else matters. So our intelligence, our free will, so one may say, well then where's free will? Free will is in your voluntarily choosing what is correct. Right? How would one say, is it intelligent to say that free will means that I do whatever I want, even if that means it's wrong? Is that good use of free will? No. Good use of free will is doing what is correct, what actually gets the result. That's intelligent. Because an activity gives a result. So why would one work for a bad result? Everybody wants a good result. Everybody's working for a result. So why would anybody choose to work for a bad result? Does that make sense? Right? So, therefore, if it's not in line with tradition, means why not? God wants to see the living entity get the best. The authorities want to see that they get the best. So then why would they give directions if it wasn't the best? Does that make sense? So if one understands, if one can't see that, that's because one is actually uneducated. So only uneducated persons can come to a conclusion that is opposed to the Vedic version. That's all. Right? Does that make sense? Because an educated person knows what is the purpose of the rule and how to apply it in time, place, and circumstance that the result is gained. Even if the form of it may not look traditional, but the accomplishment is. Does that make sense? Right? Just like, let's say, you want to make a chance, right? Now, a chance means you need the ghee in one place, isn't it? And the smaller the place and the deeper it is, the easier it is to put the spices in, right? Isn't it? So, so one would generally use for a chance a large spoon that's round, right? Spoons are round. Or something that's like a karai, right? A wok that's got a round bottom. Those make chances the best, right? So now, let's say there is no spoon or karai. All you have is a big, flat-bottomed pot. So now if I pour the ghee in there, the ghee will be in the pot like half a millimeter thick. How am I going to make a chance? Right? Not possible. But because but you could say, well, no, making a chance is throwing spices into the ghee, so the ghee is there, and I'm throwing in the spices, so it is a chance. That means they don't actually understand what a chance is. Though the natural form of it is all the ghee in one place and like this, in a nice round situation, right? Because if it's round, it's easy to deal with, right? But, so that would be the how you say, not well-educated, but the faithful. He has faith in it, but he's not educated, So he doesn't actually know how to apply it in time, place, and circumstance. Problem is because of failure to know time, place, and circumstance, then by not getting a good result from their faith, then they may drop the faith because they're not well educated. Right? Their faith is sentimental. Well placed, but sentimental. So it may not be long term. So unless they're really purified, that intelligence then comes with time, by practice, then they may drop that faith. So if they have a series of practices that do not give a good result, there's a chance that they will drop their faith. Right? If they're fortunate enough by good association to have a string of results that are good, then that faith may result in having the proper intelligence from that practice and association. But if it doesn't, then you have a faithless person. And now more faithless than the person who never had faith in the first place. Does that make sense? So now, understanding what is there, what is actually a chance, then the person takes that flat bottom pot and turns it on its edge. Right? So all the ghee runs down to the corner where the flat bottom meets the side. Right? And he cooks the chaunce there. Naturally, it's not the best because you just have this long trough of spice. You know, not so easy to get the spoon and everything to there. But you understand what you're actually supposed to do. You can make the chaunce. Then when it's finished, then you can put the pot back flat and put in your vegetables or whatever. Does that make sense? So it doesn't look traditional. You know, pots are supposed to sit on the bottom, not on the corner. Right? But it actually gets the real work done. So if you don't have someone could say, oh, it's not a chance. It wasn't in a karai. Right? But that would also be foolish. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the point. Very important is that in this institution, we're practicing as close as possible what is the tradition that we can apply it, you know, in other words, working in a contemporary environment, right? Does that make sense? Because the whole world is affected by the contemporary environment. Contemporary means that which is non-Vedic. Does that make sense? So devotees are coming from a contemporary environment. They practice a contemporary lifestyle, right? Even the local devotees and local community, which generally follows a traditional environment, is being influenced by this Western input. So they also are starting to doubt or give up the practices. So that's basically what you're looking at, what 6 billion people are doing, right? 1 billion of them come from a background where they know what the tradition is, they may be following it or not. And 5 billion of them don't really know much what's going on, right? Another 1 or 2 billion, you could say, that are Asians, then may be following to some degree simply because of their proximity to India. So because of being close to India, that culture is just somehow remained. But unfortunately, maybe half billion to 1 billion persons of European descent, they consider themselves to actually be the cat's meow of civilization, right? That they are civilization. So actually they don't really care about that 1 billion or the other 2 or 3 billion or even the others of the, you know, second and third world. Right? So this small group of very proud, arrogant persons who militate against God and his instructions, right? Then are fools. And more foolish are all the others follow them. Right? So that's the environment we're in. So to establish tradition then means you're going against the current. But an intelligent man couldn't care less. The whole rest of the world can be saying no to God. But they don't. That's intelligent. That's individual. Individual is, you know, how you say, 5,999,999,999 people don't like God's instructions and don't follow them. And the best part is they all think I'm individual and doing my own thing, but they're all doing exactly the same thing. They're all going to hell in the same bucket. Right? But the person who follows God's instructions, he's actually the individual. But all those other, you know, 5,999,999,999, they will have the audacity to say, oh, he has no opinion of his own. He's just, you know, going by the way of, you know, the previous acharyas and God, right? And just being brainwashed, right? Remember, in this, I'm not actually talking about the karmis. I'm directly talking about the devotees who are influenced by the karmis. Right? Because otherwise it's not relevant for us. So in that environment, we try to follow this tradition that's given by God. But, you know, time, place, circumstance, we have to make some adjustments. But the principle of it, that is what is to be understood. That remains. Does that make sense? So you have to understand, like we see here, that Sonaka is asking Dita, he wants to know what's behind. Why is it there? In the same way, we should want to know, why do we do what we do? Right? That we do it, that's good. But that we want to know why we're doing it, that's better. Otherwise, you may be doing it here at the school, and that's what we do here at the school. But when you leave the school, then others say, oh, that's stupid, and then you go, yeah, that's stupid, and then you don't do it. So then that means you're stupid. Right? Because you don't know why you're doing it. Others say, why are you doing it? Because of this. You know, they say, that's stupid, and says, well, that's your opinion. Sometimes it's not God's opinion, so if you think you're smarter than God, great, go for it. You know? So, does that make some sense? Yes.
Basically, individuality means doing it because you want to do it whether or not other people are doing it, and the other one is doing it just because the other people are doing it.
Yeah. See, that's the difference. Is Krishna says in the Gita, irreligion is considered a religion, religion is considered irreligion. So, being an individual doesn't mean that you haven't made a choice that everybody else has also made. Right? You know, it's so, but it's your choice. You know, like if you're following modern culture, then it's naturally different from what the parents do, because modern means what goes on today means it changes with every moment. So then the child wants to be different from the parents and want to be an individual and be do what I want to do. But if you check, what they want to do is exactly what every other kid their age is doing. And if you ask them why, they don't really have an answer. They can't tell you why they're doing it. Just feel like it, or I want to, or it's cool, or it's nice. So if it's cool, then after 6 months, will it still be cool? So if it's not still cool after 6 months, was it ever cool? That's the whole point.
So it's the reason behind and not the activity, is that?
Yeah, so it's the reason behind. Because the activity may be varied. You know, why someone does something that's there. But there must be an intelligent reason. That's what we have to know. Then, in that case, we, under all time, place, and circumstance, can follow our culture. And if anybody asks, we can tell them. They may also then understand and be convinced. So individual doesn't mean what the mass is doing. Individual means what you yourself commit to doing and are taking the responsibility for. Does that make sense? You've taken the decision, you get the benefit, you get the reaction. And it's just a matter of who you want to please. Okay, you got God, that's one person. Okay, then you have the Acharyas. Okay, there's not that many. If we take our whole parampara, there's 33 there. Okay, so that's 34 people right there. Then, okay, our guru and a few other senior persons who we know. Okay, maybe we're hitting 40. You know, like that. And then on the other side, we got, you know, okay, 40 off of, what is it, 999,000,000, you know, excuse me, 5,999,999,960 persons are doing something different. So now you decide who you want to listen to. That 40? Or the other 5,999,000,000? Choice is yours. Right? Does that make sense? You always have to remember is that how many trees, birds, beasts, insects, reptiles, fish, you know, bacteria that there are, that's how many people didn't listen to Krishna and the Acharyas. So if you want to follow them, hey, we always need another plant in our garden, right? You know, there's plenty of room, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So that's the choice. It may sound harsh, but let me tell you, that's the way it is. It's God's laws, and they couldn't care less for your sentimentality. Just couldn't care less. Doesn't matter who you are, who you think you are, what your political leanings are, what your background was. Doesn't matter. Right? Somebody made the choice to not follow the laws, not have that much faith in God, that they could, you know, as first generation be born outside of India, outside of hearing the Vedic knowledge. That's their choice. They've gotten a reaction. Now they've grown up in that culture. So now if they want to continue that same path of maintaining, not having faith in the Vedic perspective, then they can continue. That's their free will. But they should never think that that is right over God's opinion. Never. Does that make sense? Of course, then one can discuss, well, how to exactly apply God's opinion in time, place, and circumstance. But at least you're having an intelligent discussion based on the faith that God's right. We want to get it right, how to do it, rather than, oh, that's old-fashioned, or we don't care for all these things, or since when? When did it go old-fashioned? Indra today wears a dhoti, right? And there's no punk on the planet that he couldn't kick their backside. He wears a dhoti. Indra. You know, Brahma wears one. Even Narad Muni wears one. Right? Parvati Muni, he doesn't wear one. He doesn't wear anything. Right? Okay? Does that make sense? Yes.
How do you know if you're applying it correctly?
How do you know if you're applying it correctly? That it's pleasing to the Vaishnavs. How do you say? To your understanding, is following properly. I mean, that would be the only way. You'd have to see that Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra all match, and that those persons are pleased with you. Even if everybody else isn't, who cares? Right? Our boys were criticized once that they're proud, exclusive, think they're better than everybody. And then as soon as someone says that, another start agreeing, yeah, yeah, like this and that. But the one they were asked, well, what is this situation in which you've made this conclusion that they are like this? This was the answer. Well, they were coming to the temple, and we saw them coming. This is some Matajis, right? Elder Matajis. They're coming to the temple, and we saw when they were walking on the path that they were all laughing and smiling with each other. And then when they got to the courtyard, coming to the temple, then they became quiet and lowered their heads and just walked straight into the temple, right? And this was perceived as arrogance because they didn't want to look and smile at us, you know, because we're women. Does that make sense? So this is what I'm talking about, of this nonsense, non-Vedic mentality. Instead of appreciating that here, boys, that they could be over there like everybody else. You know, why looking at them? Looking at the, why, who'd want to look at them anyway? They'd be looking at their daughters. Why, how arrogant are these women to think that they deserve to be looked at by young men? And the young men should emote with them and give them something. No, you get that from your own child because he's biologically connected to you, and he has to. You know? And that's only he has to if you follow the Vedic. If you follow the modern, he doesn't. So he would be looking at the girls. Why would he be looking at you anyway? You know, so even by the modern, you know, it doesn't make sense what you're saying. But why not appreciate that these boys want to behave properly, you know, like that? They go into the temple nicely and behave themselves. You know, instead of like the other kids that are running around crazy and being, you know, nonsense. But they're nice because they smile at me. So that's everything. That's the basis of everything. If I'm pleased because I got the emotional interaction that I want on my terms, therefore, they're good guys. Or they're dealing according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, but that doesn't give me any emotional pleasure because I'm only looking for my self-centered emotional pleasure rather than at the higher point of, wow, here's people who are following the culture nicely, that's impressive, I'm inspired by that. Right? So this is what you're going to have to learn to live with. Right? This culture that you're learning is a statement. It works. Anyone of any repute appreciates it. And I'm not talking about age or who's their guru or what is their position. I'm talking about that according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, what's repute. Right? The proper mentality. These other things are to be respected. But respecting someone and following their opinions another, right? Ramachandra Puri was respected by Lord Chaitanya and all his associates, but no one followed his mood because it was wrong. Right? So respect is always there due to anybody in any station. But to actually take their opinion seriously, that's a completely different discussion. Right? So you have to be strong on this. You have to be committed that I'm going to do this whether anybody else appreciates it or not. Right? And I'll find the means to do it. I may have to make some external adjustments, but the actual attitude and purpose, I'll never change. Who are they to get me to change? Right? God wants me to do it. Guru wants me to do it. So what do I care about anybody else? Does that make sense? That's determination. That's focus. That's an individual. That's a strong person. Right? Not the person who can be tough and go and chat up the girls and, you know, do all these things. That's not tough. That every dog on the street is doing that. Every dog. Every last one. That's all they do. Fight, look tough, and go around sniffing out the backside of the girls. That's all they do. Nothing else. So, you want to be a dog? Fine. It's your choice. But never say that the Vedic can't be followed. Because if we remember, who's given the dogs their nature? Right? The President of America? Ronald McDonald? Britney Spears? Who? God. So even the animals, no matter how low class they are, they follow God's law. So if a human being doesn't follow God's law, he's worse than the animals. Lower than the animals. Does that make sense? So these are the things. We have to be very focused and convinced that we're not just here. What we do in this school is not just something that's just dreamed up just because it's nice, it's sentimental. Oh, wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it look cute if all the kiddies did this? No, this is what is tradition. Right? It may be cute, it may be not cute. That's another thing. But it's what is the tradition. So that determination, that focus, that's what makes a leader of society. Right? Is because you're doing it because you've made the decision to do it. And you know why. Not that you're doing it just as everybody else. That's a follower, right? Very important English etymological definitions. Leader means someone who they lead because they've made the decision. They know what they're doing. They know where they're going. So if someone's going somewhere, someone else can follow. Follower means I have no idea why I'm doing it, just everybody else is doing it, so I'm following somebody. Right? Even though you may have two people doing exactly the same thing, so you could say they're the same, but no. One's a leader because he's doing it to go somewhere, and the other one is doing it just to follow. Does that make sense? So in the Vedic culture, then Gurukul is for training leaders. Right? Does that make sense? And to lead must mean you're following someone of superior position. It means the acharyas. Right? That's a leader. Right? Being punk, being cool, being stupid, breaking all the rules because that's cool because, you know, everybody else does it, so I'm not doing it, so I'm different. No, you're just like every other jerk on the planet. There's millions of them who doesn't follow the rules and they think they're so cool. Right? That's ordinary. That's common. That's normal for jerks. But for humans, that's another thing. Human means I don't have, not that I have two legs and two arms and a head. No, that doesn't make a human. Human means I inquire, who am I? And I want to know. And once I know, I'm going to practice it. That's human. Does that make sense? That's an individual. You're going to do this whether anybody's watching or not. Does that make sense? That's how you know what is your value. What do you do when no one's watching? No one's there to tell you what to do. No one's there to chastise you. No one's there to praise you. What are you going to do? That's actually who you are. Yes?
Yes. You're mentioning that the kids want always different from the, want to be different from the parents. But actually, if they ask from other parents what they were when they were small, and they will get the same result, they will get the same.
Yeah.
I was the same punk kid like you.
That's true. Yeah,
but they never asked that.
They're exactly the same, right? There's a saying, I think it may be a Hungarian saying, but it's come into the English language. The apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. Right? So the kid's thinking, I'm different from my parents. No. Your parents were just like you when they were young, but since having you as the child and going through all the austerity to raise you, they've become that boring, old, you know, person who doesn't do anything because they had to live with you for the last 15 years, you know? Before they met you, they were fine, you know? They were cool, right? Yeah.
It's like he's unique, just like anyone else.
Yeah. Okay?
But you're mentioning all these things. Does that mean in Vedic culture there is no place for false ego or getting...
There's no place for false ego or that? Yes, but the false ego is within God's laws. A false ego is like this. Are you this body? No. So, but you deal with it and identify with it. Your position in society is based on this body. Right? You're a certain age, you're from a certain background, you're a certain gender... Right, you're doing certain activities, so therefore your whole identity. So that's false identity, but it's purified. It's false identity in the mode of goodness, not false identity in the mode of ignorance. I'm proud of my background. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.